Blog Talk Radio.
Living out.
It's time to unlock the combination to your life's true potential.
Living Out Loud
with Dr. Frieda Birnbaum. Dr. Birnbaum is a research psychologist, psychoanalyst, and author of What Price Power? An in-depth study of the professional woman in a relationship. She's an expert on depression, women's issues, attaining happiness, and so much more.
You got a gift, my friend.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do.
I will hold on.
Yes, you do.
Now, here's Dr. Frieda Birnbaum.
Living Out Loud.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Frieda. My website is drfrieda.com. Today, we have a very interesting guest, Kevin Alexander Gray. And what is your website? Where can people reach you?
My website, if you want to get some stuff on from me, is The New Liberator. At WordPress, but you can just Google Kevin Alexander Gray and read my stuff on Counterpunch and Progressive.
Very good. Thank you very much. And so tell us about your experience with the police and what you could tell us about what happened to you on a personal level.
Now, there were too many stories. You know, I was president of ACLU here in South Carolina for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess I could mention the time that my son and his friends were playing basketball at the local high school when they were surrounded by a bandload of plainclothes police officers looking for operating on a John Doe warrant, looking for a 13 to 18-year-old black male, 130 pounds. So they rounded up about five kids and made them get down on their knees, hands behind their heads at gunpoint, in which, as president of ACLU, I promptly sued the police department to release the records of why it was that they were doing such types of arrests. And so, you know, that's on a personal and professional level. But as a president of ACLU in South Carolina for a number of years and on the national board and working as a, you know, just in a community, you get all kinds of stuff. And, you know, you go to autopsies, you go to funeral homes. I mean, I've been writing about this and about police violence and police brutality for a decade. So, this idea that it's all new and it's some sort of epidemic of police violence, I don't know. I think that we live in a violent nation. It's predicated on violence, and we always have to be vigilant about it.
It's a very sad story, and it's very difficult. It's dangerous to be a black man in America today. There's such profiling going on, and it hasn't stopped. Finally, what's going on with Baltimore is revolutionary, and hopefully this will start us going in the right direction. What do you suggest young men do when they're being arrested? Yes.
Well, let's be clear that the blacks are disproportionately shot at and killed by police. Not only black males, but black females are disproportionately shot, arrested, and killed by police. But the majority of people killed by the police in this country are white. So folk need to wrap their brains around that. The issue is about police state violence and the rise of the police state. We can separate racial profiling out from the war on drugs. And in that particular case, we have to take a stand against the war on drugs, be supportive of legalization and criminalization to take the tool of the drug war off the table, because that's the tool that they used to round up most black men. No doubt that we live in a country where there's an ongoing fear of black people. And part of that is rooted in people's psychology about or subconscious about slavery. And thinking that black people at some point in the history of this country are going to take out their revenge. That's the whole idea about the fear of Mandingo and the fear of the black male. But when we talk about the police, we see the militarization of the police departments and most of them wanting to be quasi-military operations. We see the rise of SWAT teams, the rise of dynamic entries. We see this military-to-police pipeline where people are coming from combat zones and going into the police department and thinking that they're out on the street in a combat zone. There's the racism and the sadism that's inculcated in the system that we've got to figure out a way to deal with. So, you know, folk have to decide whether or not they want America to be a police state, and if we want to give police the right of denying people due process of law, and go straight to this idea of capital murder and street justice, or capital murder on the streets by police officer. So we have to really look at the role of police in society. Do we want to take a look at and reform this idea of shoot to kill? And how do we disempower the police so that they serve the people and they're not serving that so-called brotherhood, that blue brotherhood that they seem sworn to?
Well, you know, I'm just going to have to say that you're absolutely right. There's a buddy system mentality. But, you know, there's broken families we're talking about, and that's where it really starts, because half of these black men are missing in this section of Baltimore. There are not these role models with there are male and female partnering in relationships. So these young people come home to parents who have issues, who are not able to maintain a job. They're on drugs, they're on alcohol, only because they're not educated enough.
I don't know if I agree with you on that. I live in the heart of a black community in the South, and surely people have their problems, but the majority of drug users in America are white people. That's what the statistics say. And most black males who don't live in the house are more apt to have a relationship with their children than white males who don't live in the house. I think that's a stereotype that of the broken black male. Black families are strong as they can be, in given the context of the oppression in America. If we want to talk about a social system that where a country based on violence, a country based on war, a country based on unbridled exploitative capitalism, which is what created the environment that many people live in today in inner cities, that's an issue that we ought to tackle. But the idea, a family is what a family is. A family can be a mother and a child, a mother and two child, a father and a couple of children. So this idea of just thinking that the black family is so dysfunctional and it's because there aren't two parents in a home, that's the cause of social problems. The cause of the social problems in America is the fact that the country is built on a legacy of genocide and enslavement, lack of access to capital and credit based on that history, a withdrawal of resources from the inner city, a demonization of the poor, a demonization of inner city poor black people, and just this fear of black folk generally from a country that is guilty of oppression and suppression of black people in this country.
It all makes sense, and you're right. But when we're talking about communities that are isolated from power, and these people do not have opportunities that other people have, and often these communities are of minority races, you have to question, where is the core problem coming from? And it's basically something that children learn. Children learn how to expect being educated appropriately, how to expect going into the world and getting their needs met, what to expect from having the right kind of relationship, and how to keep going further in their lives so they can feel good and successful and productive citizens. They often don't have that core opportunity. Even if there are different types of families that function, research has shown the best families are those where you have a male and female, where the black role model for a child is not to go out in the streets and learn who they are, but to learn how to be a strong man from a person that they look up to. Because after all, it's not what you say, but what you do that affects children the most. And that's where it starts from. And these parents need to have the proper support system so they can give everything they can to their children. And it's mostly an economic problem, because if you see different races living in middle-class America, they're fine. How do we get everyone else to be more mainstream?
I don't know how fine middle class America is. I don't know. I mean, that's a subjective opinion. You know, I think the country's in trouble, and you know, if we're talking about the economics of human rights in America and why we are in the place we are, if you're talking about the root and the fundamentals of the civil rights movement, which is fighting over the denial of due process, fighting over the denial of equal opportunity and treatment, fighting over the denial of economic rights, then that's the focus, and that's what I try to focus what I'm doing on, what I'm doing here in South Carolina, and what I write about. And so when we talk about police violence, we're talking about ultimately the denial of due process of law and equal treatment. Freddie Gray did not receive equal treatment.
He was denied due process.
And he was a 50-year-old man. He was a 50-year-old man with children. So I just don't buy into the idea that black people are dysfunctional because they don't have a male and a female role model in the house. There are male and female role models throughout communities. And what we're facing now is an institutional assault against poor people and not putting people, infrastructure and making jobs available and making schools available and education available so that people can have an opportunity to make it, period.
Well, you have to understand that I am agreeing with you.
But you keep saying male and female, and male and female.
Well, research has shown that 50% of males are missing in this area of Baltimore, and that mainly when you go to functions, you see women in the schools and in the communities. And this is something that I'm definitely not making up. This is something that I have been researching. So what you're saying, and I know it's something that is really making sense, I am also saying and supporting what you're saying in a way that we need to be able to increase the way communities are being productive and the way they are functioning and making these changes. This is a very revolutionary time. I mean, if there's no justice for one, there's no justice for all. Everyone is feeling the pain with what happened to Freddie. And no one is denying that these police officers need to pay a price for their behavior. And justice finally needs to be served, to be heard by people like you, researchers, or anyone that can finally put a face on it, put some reality here, and let's make a difference now. We have no more time to wait. So we appreciate having someone like you on our show that can have such a strong voice, because these are the kind of voices we need. Writing are voices that are not heard. We need more intelligent voices that can make sense to speak for these people who have not been able to have these opportunities, as well as courts that are open for people to be able to speak about their problems, make decisions, not to have a closed system where only officers are heard and they're hearing each other and supporting each other. These things have to change. New laws have to be improvised, and people like you and researchers and all kinds of different viewpoints need to be heard so we can finally make changes now. We can no longer wait. The black man, his dignity needs to be revised in this country of ours. And so I thank you for being on our show. It's definitely important to have someone like you, and hopefully viewers will hear what you've had to say, and they will understand more so.
And where can people learn more about you? Please have your website again, Kevin.
Say again?
Can we just have your website one more time?
Oh, you can get me at the New Liberator at WordPress.
Excellent. All right,
or you can read anything on the Progressive or Counterpunch.
Thank you so much for being on our show. You did a great job.
Yeah.
We really appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
Hey, Dr. Frieda, it was incredible.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, he was
going
good.
Out there. What do you find is the most shocking about this particular case, and are you surprised that the six police officers have been officially charged with murder?
I am surprised that justice is finally being done. I'm surprised that they're being put in a place that they have no choice now, that police officers cannot get away with anything that anyone else is not getting away with. So, do I sound prejudiced? Well, I'm trying to see what is right for everyone. As I said, if there's no justice for one, there's no justice for all. And that includes everyone, every human being, no matter what your position in life is, no matter how much money you have, it really does not matter. Because as I was saying, when you live in a middle-class existence, economics really suggests what direction you can take in your life over anything else. Yes, you feel the pain of what experiences people are going through that you identify with, and maybe you have more of opportunities to make changes. But then again, everyone else is also involved in this in different ways. So when you are in a poor area and you don't have any opportunities and you're stuck economically, socially, education-wise, where do you go? So we need to make those shifts and changes. And it starts not with the teenagers or the children. It starts with the parents that are taking care of these children, because these parents are the ones that these children see every day. And this is where they go, what they go home to. And if a parent doesn't have the ability, and Kevin was right, it doesn't have to be two people, but these young men need to have strong male role models. They don't see these men at home. And so parents need to be able to have strong, different kind of appearances that are not especially present in the poorer communities. And I know Kevin said that we don't need two people, but it still holds true. Two people, feminine, masculine, getting along, being there, nurturing, being assertive, being out there, this is what children need to see.
All right, Dr. Frieda, we have our next guest. She's with us right now. Her name is Karen Dolan. She's of the Institute for Policy Studies. She is working I don't know if she wrote this report, but it's called, she's working on a project called The Poor Get Prison, The Alarming Spread of the Criminalization of Poverty, which if you go into any more details about it, it's pretty shocking. Karen, welcome to the Dr. Frieda Birnbaum Radio Show.
Thank you so much.
Welcome, Karen, and this is something that we're all talking about lately. It's really on our minds, and we can't get away from it. So where would you like to start with this? What is this, the topic that you have on your mind that you think could have the biggest effect?
Well, I think that one thing that's missing maybe from some of the headlines and some of the visuals we see on TV is really what's happening underneath the violence and the aggressive policing is what's really causing, you know, this anxiety in poorer communities. And if you step back even further, the kind of inequality that we have in this country that keep people oppressed and that keep people without resources where they are more vulnerable to being targeted and profiled and fined and incarcerated.
So where would you suggest we go with this?
Well, I think it's interesting. It would be interesting for readers to sort of take a look at really what's going on in this country. That's been going on for a very long time, but there is also a phenomenon that has increased since the recession. And I think many people have felt for their budgets were squeezed, or they may have lost a job, or a colleague may have lost a job, or a family member may have lost a job. And when you are in poor communities where there's already a lower tax base, the community budgets, the municipal, local, state budgets even, are squeezed. And there's this budget deficit that there is an attempt to make up this budget deficit on the backs of the people least able to pay, but also the most vulnerable to being caught and fined and feed and without legal representation, that end up incarcerated, that are easy targets for police to stop, as we saw with Walter Scott, for a broken taillight. And he already had, you know, a cycle of debt with child support payments, despite having paid, you know, thousands of dollars and already served time in jail for obligations that were more than he could afford in the first place. And you look at really what's going on underneath the the surface here, and you see how dangerous this cycle of debt is and how impossible it is to get out of, and you see the kind of anxiety and fear that this creates in communities, and you have a police force and a municipal court system that has become revenue collectors rather than arbitrators of public safety, serving and protecting, being judicial in justice. Other, you see them instead in the service of revenue collection, and that's a very dangerous recipe.
So there's a lot of things going on out there that are dangerous. There are a lot of different problems that we need to have closure with. And we look at it, and we have to look at where do we begin, where is the most vital, most dangerous area that we need to change right away. So if I were to ask you one area for change, what would that be?
Well, two things I would say right off. One is a living wage. And so if you are working two or three jobs and you still don't have enough money to make ends meet and to live in a place where your child can have a decent school system, you're going to remain vulnerable to these kinds of things, so that when you have a broken taillight or you have a parking violation, that you're able to pay it and you don't end up in this cycle of debt that is becoming harder and harder to get out of. Another thing that we need to do in this country is to realize debtors' prisons are illegal. So people should not be incarcerated for debt. And that has been happening more and more in this country, despite it being illegal, because the law doesn't spell out specifically what a judge needs to do with this ability to pay hearing. So in many cases, it's left up to the discretion of the judge, which is proving quite unfair. And that captures people in this cycle of debt. And, of course, if you incarcerate people for not being able to pay, a municipal code fine, they can lose their license, lose their jobs, and have less ability to pay. And, indeed, this is what's happening. So we're creating this tinderbox. So we should have conditions where people that are working hard get a living wage so that they do have the ability to pay a minor traffic violation. We should enforce the law that people can't be incarcerated simply for debt. We have to look at other ways in which our unequal society is rewarding those at the very, very top of the income spectrum and depressing the rest of us. And through these austerity measures that really have cut back on public assistance to the point where it's almost non-existent. And at the same time, of course, we're subsidizing multinational corporations. So there's something really askew that is perpetuating and, in fact, increasing this huge gap between those who have so much and those who have so little, and really squeezing the middle class. So more and more of us fall down into the place without having resources. So those are, very vital. And we should look at our schools. So children in poorer school districts, and especially poor Black student populations, are criminalized from the time they get on the bus. And things like childish behaviors of scribbling on a desk are landing children in front of judges and slapping them with a criminal record while they're still children. So there are countless ways in which this is happening to the most vulnerable of our population and those least able to afford legal representation to be able to fight some of this unfairness.
It's just amazing how the lack of education, the lack of finances, so just being stuck in one place can profile you in such a way. You're talking about small children who are treated in a way as if they were criminals by doing something in class that would be overlooked by white children, by people who are watching white children. And it starts at such a young age. And we really have to change the way we identify each other, Black or white, or wherever we are in between. So what you're saying is extremely vital for everyone to know, that it starts so early, and our attitude starts in the home if their parents are telling these children, look, this child is below you, or they laugh at other children. They're already setting a precedence of behavior that can create violence when they get older. So we really have to preach love and kindness from a very early stage. And so I really appreciate what you're telling our listeners, that they have to themselves look at everyone in the same manner, that everyone deserves a chance. And I think our country is beginning to finally see that, but there's a lot of pain involved at this revolutionary time in our lives. So I thank you very much for coming, and where can people reach you?
The Institute for Policy Studies, our website is www.ips-dc.org. And my Twitter is @KarenDolan.
Perfect. You did a great job. Thanks so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much, Karen.
Thank you so much, Dr. Frieda.
Take care. My pleasure.
Dr. Frieda, I think you get two really great guests today talking about the incredible topic. It's getting a lot of attention. Do you really think that if police across the country are all of a sudden held accountable for these actions, that it's going to have a cascade effect? Do you think that there'll be a lot less protests, a lot less rioting?
100%, Ryan. Absolutely. Everyone needs to be accountable. And these police officers, we're finding out, are doing things because of these videos that are not even what it is said that they did. And that's the astonishing part, and that's the scary part. So if we can capture something like this in one or two moments, just imagine what else has been going on out there that we didn't really know about. So it's time to be able to judge everyone in the same manner, that everyone has opportunities to do right. But if they do wrong, even if they are in the police profession, they have to be judged and pay up for the consequences of their behavior. Absolutely. There's so much going on that we need to talk about with these police officers who have closed-door policies when they go to court. And how often do they support each other? And how often is it looked away at what they've done? Where other people do not have anything to say in a way that they can be heard, so they have to riot in order to have a voice. Rioting is a cry for help. There's no other way to go. And these people are very hurt and disturbed. And when I say these people, I'm actually saying everyone. Everybody is hurting for the black minority that is constantly being targeted or called thugs, when they're really put in situations where they are behaving accordingly to the system. They're being mistreated, and they don't know what to do about this. So it's not necessarily that a black youngster is being a criminal when he's misbehaving in the court system, but maybe the court system is setting it up for him to misbehave.
Okay. And Dr. Frieda, fortunately, that's all the time we have left. Where can people learn more about you?
Well, they can reach me on my website, drfrieda.com.
Okay. And stay tuned. We'll be back here next week at 4 p.m. Eastern Time to have another great show. Some more great guests.
Absolutely. Who knows? Maybe Ryan will be talking about the same thing. There's so much to talk about. We never know.
You never know.
It's very big what happened to the police officers. Yeah.
Got it. All right, everyone, have a great weekend. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.